Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and we are joined again today by author and podcaster August McLaughlin. For The Stacks Book Club, we are discussing Three Women by Lisa Tadeo. And yes, there will be some spoilers today, so please read the book before you tune in. This episode of The Stacks is brought to you by Book of the Month. Book of the Month is a monthly subscription box that sends you hardcover books that are brand new to your doorstep. They're great if you're trying to make reading a bigger part of your life, and they're also great if you're already an avid reader and you're looking for the newest, hottest books that are coming out. They even offer books to their members before they're released to the general public, which is an amazing perk. Today on the podcast, we're discussing Three Women by Lisa Tadeo, which was actually a Book of the Month pick back in July. It then went on to become a bestseller. And I'm only telling you this because it just goes to show that Book of the Month takes a lot of care in selecting the books that are interesting and diverse and worth talking about. And so you should check them out. Book of the Month is totally commitment free. You can skip a month if the book doesn't interest you, or you can double up on something if one month sounds extra amazing. Honestly, it's just about reading good books that excite you, which is really refreshing and something that we obviously take very seriously around these parts. Oh, and you know this, listeners of this show get their first month for $9.99 by going to bookofthemonth.com and using the code THESTACKS. It's super easy. You get a good book. It comes right to your door. And then you can thank me later. Happy reading. All right, here it is, your weekly reminder. Everything we talk about on today's episode can be found in the show notes. There is a link there that will take you to all the books discussed today, as well as the social media accounts for The Stacks and our guests. Plus, if you shop through the links on Amazon, you're helping to keep The Stacks free. If you're looking for an amazing book recommendation, send us an email to askingthestacks@gmail.com. Myself and my guest will read it on air, discuss it, and then give you a personalized book recommendation or five. So email askingthestacks@gmail.com with your name, what you're looking for, and maybe a few titles you've loved or hated. If you like The Stacks and want to support the work we're doing, here are a few easy ways you can help. First of all, join us over on Patreon. That's a website where you support the work we're doing and earn perks for yourself. We've got a virtual book club, we got inside access to the show, and we have an amazing community of other readers who love the podcast. So head over to patreon.com/thestacks to join in. Another way to support the show is to support our sponsors like Audible. They are your go-to destination for all things audiobooks. Plus, if you listen to this show, you do get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. So go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. The last thing you can do to help the show is definitely the easiest. Subscribe to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating and a review and tell your friends and family about the show. It goes a really long way to helping us reach new audiences. All right, now it's time for my conversation with August McLaughlin about Lisa Tadeo's book, Three Women. All right, everybody, we are back today with August McLaughlin. She's the author of Girl Boner. She's a writer, activist, podcast host, all around sexual identity and women's sex positivity. And yeah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Tracy.
I am so excited you're here. Today for the Stacks Book Club, we're talking about Three Women by Lisa Tadeo. It came out in like mid-2019. It's a nonfiction book about three women and their lives as they relate to sex and intimacy. I think is probably the easiest way to say it. And while I'm not exactly sure what this conversation is going to entail because we haven't had it yet, there might be some spoilers today. Nothing too major, nothing that you couldn't find from Googling, but if you really want a fresh, untainted experience of this book, go read the book and then come back. If you're on the fence about reading the book or you've already read it, keep listening. That's what I would say. Yeah. Think that's fair?
I think that's fair.
I think that's fair. Okay, we always start in the same place. What did you think of this book?
There's so much I love about it.
Okay.
The writing is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I feel brilliant. I mean, there are parts, it was almost the way when I hear Adele's voice and I'm like, what must it be like to open your mouth and like Aretha Franklin comes out?
Or, right,
you know, like,
right.
There was that feeling at certain times of just as a writer, just going like, oh, so much awe. Like,
right.
This is art. And she made some really unique choices, I thought, in the ways, like some of the viewpoints that shifted. And I love that it's these three stories I thought were really, all of them were compelling, super fascinating. I think a lot of people will relate to something about these people. The one thing that was a bit challenging for me, that once I just set it to the side, it was fine, was some of the marketing around it has been like, this is the like women's desire revealed kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of the reviews were saying things about how this is how women experience desire.
Right.
And this is three women.
Right.
And when you think of it that way, I think it's a beautiful book. It's three women. It's their experiences.
Right.
And they're important stories, I think. But I don't think that we can lump people together that way.
Right.
By gender or just, you know, every individual is unique.
Right. Or that three people could speak for a whole huge group of people.
Completely, 100%.
Yeah. I come down somewhere a little more critically, I think, on this book. I agree. I thought the writing was really good. I think, actually, I don't even know if the writing is necessarily good, but the book is super readable. That's what I would say, which is a weird distinction that I sometimes like to make. It's kind of the Grey's Anatomy thing, which is that's my favorite TV show and I find it to be compulsively watchable. But when I look at Grey's Anatomy up against Breaking Bad, I recognize that maybe the quality is different. Do you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
So like this book is so consumable.
It's very consumable.
Whether or not it's high art writing, I don't think that matters. I think this book is readable in a major way. However, overall for me, I just didn't find that there was enough contrast in this book. I didn't find that the women were different enough. And while I agree with you that a lot of the marketing was around women's desire, I actually went back after I read the book and reread the introduction that Lisa herself wrote. And she talks about how this book is about women's desire, which then made me think, if you think that this book is all encompassing, what are we saying about what you think a woman is, right? They're all cisgender. They're all white. Mm-hmm. You could make the argument that Sloane is not straight.
Yeah,
given
her maybe pansexual.
Yeah,
or bisexual or something.
But that's not really said expressly. So I had a lot of issue with that. And I also think the other thing that was really, when we'll talk more about all these things, but one of the things that was really challenging for me is after all the research that Lisa did, which I think she said 8 years or something, I didn't feel like she actually came back as the author and made any points. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like she kind of just was like, I did all this research and this book is about women's desire. And then kind of was like, okay, let me just have these women tell this story. But if you're saying that it's about this bigger thing, what have we actually learned? Like, what did you learn? What do you, like, where's your reflection as our guide into this world? So because I also found the introduction and the conclusion to be quite good, I would have liked to hear from her more.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because the intro and when I got to the outro, it almost felt out of place at first,
because
we've been away from her for so long.
For so long.
And I felt like it could have been two books. Like, if you're reading it for the women's stories, then that's one book.
Right.
And I almost felt like it was trying to be more than that, but it wasn't.
She didn't quite turn that
corner. And I don't know how you could make these three women's stories into like a self-help book, for example, right? Like,
right.
I almost felt like either the intro or the outro, maybe – I liked that she talked about her personal life, but at the same time that it was kind of like presented as research.
Right.
You do expect it to be more nonfiction traditional.
Right.
And it almost felt more novel-like, but true stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does feel very, really novel-like. And I have heard a lot of people who don't like nonfiction say how much they liked this book.
And I love nonfiction. And so that also is probably part of it for me is I am looking for you to take these three women and tell me something if you're presenting it as a piece of nonfiction versus memoir as told through. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's kind of what we got.
Totally.
But without even real self-reflection from those women. 'Cause usually in memoir, it's kind of like, this is what happened to me and this is what I've learned and this is my journey. But we don't really get that either.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I do like the feeling of we're going on these journeys with these women.
Yeah.
But as you pointed out, like actually when you first mentioned this book to me, I thought I'm either going to like really love it or I'm going to hate it because knowing nothing about it yet,
right.
Just that it was about women's desire because any book that genders desire has problems for me, really. I mean, and I say that as a person who wrote a book about women's sexuality, but obviously I'm talking about it in like a really broad way,
right?
Because so much of the content that we have is like women are this way, men are this way, very, very binary and very heteronormative and all those things. So I think it was a little refreshing to me that I was just having the stories because the stories I think we can learn from and they're interesting, but if I didn't know that they were real people, I would have thought I was reading a novel.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've heard from a lot of people who have said that this book, they saw themselves reflected back. And I thought that that is got to be really powerful. If you relate to any of the women or any parts of the women, that those moments probably feel really gratifying. Yeah. And I don't want to take away from anybody who's had those experiences or who had that experience in reading this book, because I do think it's important to understand that you're not alone if your husband won't French kiss you, right? Or that you're not alone if your husband likes having threesomes or watching you have sex with other men or any other minor feelings or moments that come up in the book. So for that, I think that this book is important because it kind of, you know, lifted up the curtain and showed a part of women engaging in sexual activity that is often reserved for like porn.
Yeah. And I really appreciated that because a lot of times too, desire when in the context of anything female comes out as very puritanical and like that we don't really have ravenous sexual appetites. That's, I mean, not all, but many of us. And I think in that way, it's a brave and important book, even to show that these women all have sexual appetites.
Right.
I mean, that is still something that people are stunned by sometimes.
Right. So one of the things that made me a little bit uncomfortable about this book is that I felt like a lot of the sex was driven by the men.
That's interesting.
Like that Sloan was – so really quickly, let's just go over the three women. So Maggie is the high school student who is in a – she's underage. She's in a relationship, if you want to call it that, with her teacher, Aaron. And it's about the book, when Lisa speaks to her, it's after the relationship. So Maggie is now an adult, but it's reflecting back on the relationship and there's a trial going on and all of that. Lena is a woman who is in a sexless marriage. Her husband won't even kiss her. And she starts an affair. Well, she leaves her husband and then starts an affair with her ex-boyfriend from high school, Aiden. And then Sloan is married to Richard, and Richard is into her having sex with other people. And he likes to watch either in person or through FaceTime or whatever it is. And sometimes maybe it's two couples and sometimes it's just her with another man. And so those are kind of the like real quick overview of the stories. But did it ever feel like that the women weren't actually in control of their sexual desires necessarily in this book?
I would say, well, with Maggie, I thought what was so important about her story was they showed the grooming process so well.
Yeah.
I mean, she's abused and I mean, it's really, really intense. And I felt like we really got to see all the complicated feelings around that when you're a child and something's happening to you. So certainly she had no autonomy at all. I think that Lena, it did become that he definitely was the one who she wanted it all the time. And when he was available to her, then, you know, then she would go running.
Right.
And I think that is a narrative that people of all genders can relate to having happened. It would have been nice if, but I'm also like, well, these are true stories. So that's where, like, what any time that I felt like, because one thing in Sloan's story, there was one point where I was just like, it was hard for me to believe. And I don't know if I missed something or what, but to me, she seemed really into having, like, I thought she was initiating a lot of this exploratory sex and threesomes and all this different stuff. And then, like, toward the very end, like, in her conclusion, all of a sudden, it was like, she did it for him. And I was like, what? I didn't think that. During her stories, I wasn't thinking that.
Oh, interesting.
It wasn't until she actually said that because, and I don't know if she was admitting it to herself until then or something, but it didn't feel that realistic to me for her to, if that is what happened, for her just to, I don't know if she had a sudden awareness or if I was just, I was reading that story as like, I know a lot of, not a lot, but I know people who very much would relate to her story, but they want that sex and they want to have multiple partners and all that stuff. So I thought it was like a more inclusive tale also being not just straight until that point. And I was like, whoa, I didn't understand that, but maybe I missed something.
I was not surprised by that at the end, but I don't remember necessarily when I knew that. And it's also possible that I knew that going in. So I might've read a review before. Okay. So I had that in my mind. I honestly can't remember. But I feel like the scene where she is watching him have sex with the waitress gal who works with them, and she's like not into it, and she says like a part of her dies or whatever, I felt like maybe that to me felt weird.
When did that, was that early?
Early. It was like the first time that they had.
Oh, she was having all those mixed feelings.
Yeah. Like she was into it, but then when when she looked at him and he was enjoying himself and with another woman, it really hurt her deeply.
I totally hear. Okay. That makes sense to me. Exactly. Especially what you were saying with your feelings around that. I think what I was thinking when I was reading that was, most people, when they're just starting out something like that, it's so different from what we're told is okay.
Right.
So you're going to have
or what you
feeling.
Think it might be.
Totally. And that's why a lot of times, you know, in like sex educators and coaches and therapists will say, you know, take a baby step first, because even if it is something you enjoy to be in this like orgy,
right,
you're not used to seeing your partner with somebody else. So I was reading that as mixed feelings because she was also having a lot of pleasure too.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I can't put my finger on exactly which moment in the book, but I definitely had those thoughts of like, this feels like the – well, also because when she went and had that threesome later on, he was like, I can't believe you didn't call me in. Like,
right, when she did one for herself.
Yeah.
And that was – yeah, we didn't get to learn anything about him.
There's some – yeah, really. I think that maybe that's part of my – issue with the book is that because the men are so important to these relationships, but we don't ever really get to learn about them, even if obviously she's not going to go interview them also, but more about their backstories or more about who they were or where that came from. Or maybe she could have interviewed them and got, I don't know. I just, especially Richard, the husband of Sloan, he was the one that I was like, I need to know about you.
Yeah. He didn't have a personality really, which I know she was telling the story again of these three women. So I was just thinking, this is how that person is experiencing this.
Right.
You know? And so I was able to not kind of like, critique that so much, but it did occur to me how fascinating it would be to have people of all different genders so that it's not like this is how women experience desire. You know what I
mean?
Because there are plenty of men who would be having those same feelings, who are pining and who are like, you know, waiting for the person to call so they can be there.
Right.
Because if you think about it, if these were three men in the book, it would be criticized in another way, you know, like if somebody said that the man is just so sex hungry. Oh, he's just being a dude. Like,
Just,
boys are boys.
Right. I think this book could have benefited immensely from some diversity.
Yeah.
From someone who is either genderqueer or queer in their sexuality. I think that would have made a huge difference. I think that someone who wasn't white would have made a huge difference. I actually think that having three people who were all not white probably would have been really powerful and interesting because we so often think of desire through the white lens.
Absolutely.
Right? That like being a sexy woman is okay if you're Angelina Jolie, but it's not okay if you're Tiffany Haddish, right? Like it's Absolutely. A joke all of a sudden, or yeah. it's hypersexualized. Or I would love to have learned something or had a glimpse into an Asian woman, because I know that there's a lot of, you know, stereotypes and things wrapped up into Asian women's sexuality. So I felt like by going this way, we mm-hmm. lost out on a lot.
Absolutely. Which does also tie into the whole idea of if this is supposed to be about desire as a whole,
right.
and we're excluding people.
Right.
Because I don't know, it sounded like these three stories were chosen somewhat representative.
Right.
And what I do like is it brought up a lot. The differences between gender when it comes to desire tends to be societal for the most part. Otherwise, it's very individual.
Right.
Very. We're so much more alike than we are different, and yet we're all completely unique, which right. fascinates me.
Right.
And so it's a really important aspect to be thinking, like, if these people had similar lived experiences, that isn't representative.
Right. Yeah. And just in the idea of being cisgender women, that right there is a, you know, like, so for the lack of diversity, like do you know what it kind of felt like to me? It felt like maybe she had this idea for this book. She talked to maybe, let's say, 10 women. And in the course of the election in 2015, 2016, as she's writing this book, she was like, I'm going to talk about women not in liberal circles. Like I'm going to, you know, like it felt like there was a choice maybe made to yeah. be
like conservative almost.
Yeah. Like, to be like, see
Bible Belt.
Yeah. Or like that we're not so different. Like women in other places are having relationships with their teachers, you know, like that maybe there was some attempt at something like that, but it's not representative mm-hmm. If the majority of the identity politics line up for all three people.
Right.
And I mean, you only have three that. People also. It's not like you have a huge swath. So
completely.
If you're going to do that, you've really got to make a choice. Like,
yeah.
I would have loved to see someone who was, you know, living below the poverty line, or someone who was, you know, we talked about race or you know, like there's just so many things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why not do a super rich woman – super rich, you know, Latina woman in San Francisco.
Yes.
And put that against Maggie.
Completely.
Like, because what things can we draw from those two stories?
Yeah.
You know?
And in that way, it would have been fascinating to have a book of more like essays, maybe 50 women from across yeah. the country, all different socioeconomic levels, all different races, right. all different gender identities, orientations. Like, that would have been more interesting, because then also you see the thing that we need to learn about desire is that it is this beautiful, like, it's not even a spectrum. It's like the swirl of color.
Right.
And everyone is so different. It's very fluid. So that piece is very much missing.
Right.
So it only was enjoyable to me when I think about it as I'm going through journeys with these women.
Yeah.
And Sloane's was not as compelling to me as the others.
Interesting.
Did you find that one struck you more?
I preferred Maggie and Sloane to Lena.
Okay.
Lena kind of irritated me. Because I didn't like Aiden. I felt like Aiden was fucking with her in a way that was mean. Mm. So I just wanted to be like, Lena, girl, he's just not that into you. Like, go find another dick. Like, you can
yeah.
do it. You can do it, Lena.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
like, and so I just, in the beginning, I was rooting for her. But by the end, I was like, girl,
yeah.
no, the cigarettes, like the car, just come on, honey. No.
Yeah. Not into you. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. He was, that was a really interesting, her storyline was fascinating to me in that it really seemed clear that she was missing affection and she was missing sex and intimacy. She didn't actually love this guy. She didn't know
right.
this guy.
Right.
And he just wanted the sex and she just wanted the sex.
Right.
But because women are taught that if you want sex, you have to want a marriage with the person.
Right.
Like, at least she probably learned that just given her personality
right.
and the things that were happening. I wish that there were scenes of her talking to a therapist, you know, like
right.
that would have been fascinating to see like the layers. And because then it's more nonfiction too, to go, where did you learn this? Like,
mm-hmm.
what is it that gives you the impression that you're going to have a life with this man who mm-hmm. you only knew as a teenager?
Right.
And now you love the sex and that's great. I will say, though, this was one of the scenes that made me cry. She had period sex and she was talking about her chronic pain. And I thought it was a really beautiful, because this was towards the beginning, too.
Mm-hmm,
we didn't know how into it he was. But it was so important, I thought, in that we don't have any depictions of these really common conditions.
Right.
You know, all of it, that there's period blood. That, to me, that's groundbreaking in a book.
Right, totally.
So I really appreciated that.
Yeah. That, you're right. That was such a moment of, I've never seen this before in a book.
Yeah.
I think that another place where these three women are more similar than different is that they all experienced sexual trauma or emotional trauma early in their lives. And I think that that is very common. But I also wonder about how that affected their sexual lives moving forward. Mm-hmm. And not to say that I don't believe that any sexual behavior or sexual trauma young is indicative of any behavior later. I think that that is something that we're taught. Like, if you're abused, then you're going to go and be, you know, a sex worker, or that you're going to have a problem with having an orgasm. I don't believe that those things are always true or even ever true. They might be true for some people, but not on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can't draw those lines necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's interesting that in this book about women's desires, the other thing we learned about women, if we take this book as what it presents itself as, is that women all have sexual trauma and therefore have weird, in quotes, sex lives.
I also noticed that. And there are good parts of that and there are bad parts of that.
Right.
Because on one hand, yeah, it is incredibly common. And one of the reasons that, like, for example, the orgasm gap that we hear about, one of the reasons for that is because trauma and abuse and oppression are major buzzkills.
Right.
Like, that is the biggest. If you lump those things together, that is the thing.
Right.
And most of us deal with that. So I appreciated that. But I also don't like to draw those lines between, because a lot of times people think that if you are polyamorous, you for sure were traumatized as a child.
Right.
Because why would you want two partners?
Why would you choose that?
Yeah, it would be nice to have a, you know, a happy story or somebody who's having at least fulfilling.
Right. Or someone who wasn't exposed to the early death of their mother, or, you know, like, there's like, these stories were so devastating. Mm-hmm. In so many ways, before we even get to these women, like their origin stories, like Maggie and the guy in Hawaii.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Like, it's like,
Maggie's,
how many times
just,
does Maggie have to be raped for us to, you know, like, it's like, I don't know that Maggie's story needed two other stories that were so like, yeah. Or because also Lena was raped. She was like gang raped.
Yes.
Like, it's like, I don't know that.
And her brother like asked to.
Yeah.
Have sex with her once.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think,
like, I would have loved a healthy, not that, those are things are not healthy,
right.
But I would have loved someone who had sex for the first time when they were in college and like they were dating the person and they felt really good about it and it didn't work out. But, you know, it was consensual and it wasn't binge drinking. It wasn't
right.
In front of a camera. It just was like kind of run of the mill, not so great. Virginity losing
totally,
moment.
Totally. Because,
you know?
Then that person could still have
go,
a big issue
yeah,
to
could
deal
still
with.
Like, be married to
arc.
Richard and completely. Could still have a husband who yeah. likes to watch his wife sleep.
Yeah.
Like, I would have just loved to see that, because I feel like a little bit the lines were drawn that trauma begets trauma when it comes to sex. And
yeah.
For some people that is definitely the case. And for some people it's not. And I think some of it has to do with therapy and your community
totally.
And all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And if Sloane had, if she had been enjoying her experiences the whole time and wasn't doing it just for him,
mm-hmm.
That could have been a very healing thing. Like, a lot of
yeah.
people go to, I shouldn't say a lot, but some people go to BDSM to heal from trauma.
Hmm.
Some people have rape fantasies. And do like therapeutic reenactments where they are in control and they like a little bit of the pain and it turns them on, and then they are able to have their own healing, cathartic sexual experience.
Right.
And they might stay involved in that kinky, consensual, pleasurable violence that they experience.
Right.
Or you can be involved in kink and never have gone through all of that.
Right.
But that would have been a cool thing if actually Sloane was doing all of that. And it was, it was what she actually wanted and found healing. But what I sensed from her was she always felt invisible, like
right.
her whole entire life.
Her whole life.
Yeah.
Well, so you and Sloan do share a history of eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And you talk a lot about it in your book. I think that section is really interesting and powerful. And I had never, ever in my 33 years of life heard someone expressly say that there's a connection between eating disorders and sexuality, not for everyone, but that that can be there. So I'm just curious, I would love for you just kind of to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
From your experience.
Yeah, I didn't realize how connected those things were for me until I was in that college class that I had talked about where I had this awakening where I realized I hadn't been talking about sex and I started this exploration. It was in hindsight, years later, that I realized that was the moment I stopped wanting to starve myself. So I don't think it is connected for everybody, as you said, but it's interesting to me that when you go through eating disorder treatment, you will cover everything else. You know, people ask me about my spiritual life. They asked me about my cognition, my physical health. Was I menstruating? How is your sleep? How are your moods? Like, what about the other quality of life issues that involve sex? Because if somebody had asked me that early on, that would have brought the epiphany earlier. You know, it would have been the thing that helped me heal. So there is often a connection. If you've been through like sexual trauma, that will affect, that will manifest into eating disorders for quite a few people. So yeah, definitely can be connected. And it was interesting because in Sloan's story, I thought I might relate to her more because of that. Because a lot of times when I meet someone who's had an eating disorder, there's like a kindred thing because you kind of understand something about each other that even though I consider myself past tense healed for years, I still understand like the hypersensitivity of someone. And you have a strong will and you, but not everyone is that way. And she's not, which is an important thing because not everybody with an eating disorder is like super determined, you know, has like control issues, whatever. I didn't relate to her as much, but I did think it was interesting and helpful to include at least, you know, the eating disorder piece.
Right.
Because it is missing from conversations.
Right. I mean, I've never heard it expressly said like that. Granted, I'm not an expert on sex or eating disorders, but it's something that when you said it in the book, I was like, sure, this makes a ton of sense. I can't believe I've never heard this before.
Yeah, it is one of those. That's the feeling I had too. I was like, well, duh, it totally makes sense after the fact.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the moment.
When you respect your body, you treat it differently.
Right.
And
that covers all the different ways that you
completely.
Treat your body.
And if you think about restriction, if you are somebody, most eating disorders involve at least attempts at restriction. Even if you're a binge eater, a lot of times you're like trying to restrict and that's what leads to the binging. If you're anorexic, it's like your whole life. And you are restricting not only food, but pleasure. I mean, you're not getting pleasure from, like I could eat foods that tasted terrible, but it tasted so good to me because I was eating something. And like now I care about the quality of the food. And, you know, it's just, I allow those pleasures. So I think that pleasure as a whole is such a huge, huge thing in our sexuality, but in our whole lives, we have this idea, a lot of us, if we grew up in any conservative community or in certain religions or different denominations, we learn that restriction is like godly or a way to be a better Muslim or like, it's just, it's unfortunate.
Right. Or like that abundance is bad or greedy in all things.
Yeah.
Huh. And I guess if you carry the thought about pleasure, whether it's food or sex or whatever brings you pleasure, restricting that is connected to any other kind of thing that brings you individually pleasure.
Yeah.
So if it's food, whatever it is, it's connected to any other source of pleasure that you might have.
Absolutely.
And maybe those things aren't as physically detrimental, but they're still emotionally, mentally, you're still fucking up your inner self, your inner good.
Yeah.
Fuck. Wow. Yeah. Like, let me take a deep breath and just process that. Well, it is. It's a lot. And these things are interconnected. And like you said, you were never asked about the sexual part of your life while you were going through treatment. Is that right?
Yeah,
healing, whatever it is, sure. Therapy. And I wonder how many people who have had or are still battling eating disorders would benefit from conversations about pleasure in general.
Oh, huge. Yeah, I think so. That's very insightful. I think one thing that happens too is somebody who is struggling with body image issues or compulsive dieting or whatever might be struggling with, let's say, lack of desire. That's pretty common if you're starving or restricting. And then that person will try to get treatment for that because they feel like they're not a good partner or whatnot. So they're trying to fix themselves for somebody else.
Right.
Right. And when that is the case, I think what can be helpful is taking sex off the table and just saying, you know, what role does pleasure play in your life? Do you prioritize it for yourself?
Right.
Do you masturbate?
Right.
You know, those, somebody who's self-punishing is not going to be carving out time to have pleasure.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be sexual. Maybe it's that they take a 5-minute walk during the day when they have stressful work hours or something. But that is something that I think we get from sexual empowerment. It has nothing to do with sex, but it's just living a more balanced life where we take care of ourselves in that way.
Right. And we seek out pleasure.
Yeah.
You said masturbation. I don't even remember. Do any of the women in this book, are there any scenes of masturbation?
I don't think so. I was really struck by that too. And as I went deeper in, I'm like, I don't think even once, which was interesting because if you're pining for, she wanted affection too.
Lena. Yeah.
So I get that hers was not just about getting off. Mm-hmm. But when she was pining like that, he would masturbate.
Right.
Like he would want a picture of her and then he would masturbate. But it didn't occur to her.
But she wasn't.
Right. Which made me think, okay, I understand that because it used to not occur to me either.
Right. Because that's not what she actually wanted. She wasn't actually that worried about the sex.
I think she did want the sex. I mean, I think she enjoyed the pleasure and the sex and I think that she wanted it. But at least the story she was telling herself
was more about the intimacy.
She wanted a future with him.
Yeah.
And I think it was more about a lot of people who have affairs, it's so much about them feeling like they have lost connection to who they are. And they seek somebody, some relationship that makes them feel alive again in a way they didn't before.
Right.
And so I think he was just filling that role for her.
Right.
And I don't think she had it in her to go off and be independent.
Right.
She didn't seem to have that in her. And I feel like that came probably from upbringing and society and all that stuff. But she didn't stand up and say, I'm not going to – she needed to have an out. She wasn't going to just walk away. I also did appreciate that they showed a man, not being interested in sex because that's very important too.
Right.
And common. And I feel like I was like, please don't make him be gay. Please don't make him be gay. Make everybody else be more diverse, but let's have him be straight.
Right.
Because I thought if the ending is like he's gay,
right?
Then we're saying if you don't want sex and
you're
you have a penis, then you're gay.
Right. If you don't want sex with a woman. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. Because for Lena, I think she enjoyed the sex, but I think it definitely was wrapped up in being seen and and having intimacy and being touched and being kissed because she really goes off on that kiss and she's like, and the sex is really good.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
kissing was like her fetish almost. She was like, so.
Well, imagine being married for years and being depraved of just like something that's so easy. Like, I mean, I don't know. I believe all interactions should be consensual, but I feel like her husband could have just faked it.
I mean, a kiss is a kiss. I mean, and he wasn't just like.
But it's not a first kiss.
No.
It's not like you're actually saying like, okay, I want to explore things with you.
Totally.
It's like, we're married.
Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't even cuddle with her, really.
He wouldn't even indulge her. That's pretty fucked up.
I think he was asexual.
Yeah, maybe.
Which again, since it's hard to like, without the stories, we don't know.
Yeah, without.
That would have been fascinating though.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
And it would have been another diverse experience, something to look into, but what we're left with is he's an asshole and he's just being mean to her for no reason.
He's very one-dimensional.
Yeah, because I feel like when you're in a marriage, I'm in a happy marriage, but even when I'm not super into my husband for whatever reason, I'll still do things that I know that he likes just because I'm like, this is, it's easier just to do this nice thing. And whether that's doing the dishes, you know, it doesn't have to be kissing or whatever. I'm not convinced my husband's super into French kissing, but
yeah.
But it could be whatever, and you just do it because you recognize that this other person has things that you could make their life a little bit better. And yeah. for this husband, aside from perhaps being asexual, which is never said, he's just being an asshole.
Yeah, he's not being kind
like,
to her.
Just give her a hug, like this right. poor woman.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I agree. There was – he came across as very arrogant.
And then her girl group was like, why are you bugging him about that? Remember? And it's like – What kind of girl group is this? Right. I hate these women.
I know. It's really that was really unfortunate. It made me feel like, you know, you're in the middle of this tiny little town in the middle of Iowa, you know, or something.
Right.
Like
you just feel she just was so alone.
So alone. Yeah.
Which is hard.
I'm glad you mentioned the doing the dishes because that was Sloane's fantasy. That was when I was just like, wait a minute. Because I really thought that she was into the things other than that complicated first time. I thought that she was exploring and having fun. And then she describes her fantasy. And I was just like, oh, I mean, these are true stories. So I have no judgment, but from like a plot standpoint, that was very frustrating to me just because the whole stereotype of women just fake sex, fake orgasms to have a relationship and men fake relationships to get sex. And that women just want to have a clean house and like turn me on by doing the dishes, which I get emotional labor is really important. Mm-hmm. So having somebody actually do the things and give you autonomy is very important.
Right.
That should be like basic level. That shouldn't be like the only thing you fantasize about. But I was so shocked that was her fantasy was to have him clean.
Right. Do you think that some of that also comes from the idea that we're trained so early on from society to want certain things that we lack the imagination to even have fantasies that are outside of these things?
Probably. Yeah, very well said. Because I feel that a lot of women don't learn that they don't have permission to fantasize.
Right.
You know, like I remember the first time I let myself fantasize. I was already living in New York and I was working as a model and I had a boyfriend back at home and it was an Ally McBeal episode that was on. I don't know if you ever saw that. It's before your time, I think, but
I know Ally McBeal, Calista Flockhart.
Yes. Calista Flockhart.
I'm slightly older than you think.
But I just remember having this, like my boyfriend and I were like on a break and I gave myself permission. I couldn't stop thinking about this scene in the car wash where like she has sex with a stranger and all of my roommates we all stopped. We were all like staring at it. And like, I was kind of like drooling on the inside of my mouth all week because I'd never let myself do that.
Right.
And I didn't even know that I absorbed that message.
Right.
So some people still have that in them. I think it's still pretty common that, they lack the imagination because you're like, you're supposed to want X, Y, and Z.
Right. And if the thing that you're supposed to want is a clean house, the only way you can fantasize is within that restriction or something.
Yeah.
And so that's what it is. Not that that's not a valid fantasy, but just that we're probably all more restricted in our fantasy lives than maybe we want to admit.
Yeah.
Because of outside influence.
Probably. And there's shame around fantasies too, which is fantasizing, if we allow it, then it's just like a not a big deal part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
If we try to repress it, then they can fester. And that's where like a fetish will turn into an obsession.
Right.
You know, and Dr. Megan Fleming, who answers questions on my podcast, I love how she talks about fantasies. She said, people, you might fantasize about robbing a bank because you want money.
Right.
You're not going to do it. Like, and so she always says, like, allow yourself to have the not clean, perfect, quote unquote.
Right.
Fantasies.
Well, right. And we understand non-sexual fantasies for what they are. Like, I won't say who I had this conversation with because they might get mad at me. I don't think they'll care. But we're talking about being in the kitchen. And do you ever just fantasize that you're going to just stab your own hand or that like someone's going to walk in the kitchen and you're going to turn around and you're going to stab them? And like, it comes not from a place of wanting to kill anyone or self-mutilate, but that conversation around knives in the kitchen is such a throwaway conversation that I've had with this person many times, weirdly. But it's never felt taboo.
Yes, that's such a good point.
Aside from right now sharing it with everyone else in the world who's like, Tracy's a murderer. No, but you know, you have this knife, or like, what would I do if mm-hmm. I cut my finger off right now chopping these onions?
Oh, completely.
And that is a form of fantasy.
Yep.
But there's no one's calling the police on me. No one's saying that I'm bad for having this thought. But when it comes to sexual fantasy, it's like you can't even say it out loud.
That's such a good point.
Because people will think that you're weird or gross or dirty or in your world, not a good girl.
Yes. Yeah. That is such an excellent point. You're so right. I mean, every writer, we walk around with the what if questions.
Right.
I mean, it's creativity. It's,
right.
And our creativity and our sexuality are very innate.
Right.
And interwoven too.
I also think in America, we have a weird problem with imagination. I don't know where that comes from.
Do you think we always have, or you think it has to do with like that we've become so always on video games and our internet and laptops and...
Well, maybe, but those people who make those things are creative and imaginative.
Yeah.
I don't know. We do have video games and things like that for kids, but I feel like at a certain point we are
you grow up.
You grow up, you go out of imagination.
Yeah, that's true.
Or like weird.
We stop
think
playing.
Things are weird. Yeah, we stop playing. That's totally right on.
That totally ties into pleasure. It's like, why do something just for fun?
Right. Right. Yeah, why try this thing if you don't already know
unless
that
you're going to get paid for it or it's part of your goal or like
right.
Yeah.
Totally. And I've always been a more on the well, I used to be really weird creative like kid performance. And as I got older, moved away from that cuz I think we're taught not to do that kind of stuff, which is why some of my favorite people are people that I'm like, that's a fucking weirdo. I love that person. Like to me, being weird is awesome. I don't necessarily think that it's a pejorative, though I know people hear it that way. Mm-hmm. But I think that weird is like how nerd has been reclaimed.
Yeah.
To me, weird and nerd are kind of in that same world where it used to be kind of rude to say, but I'm like, oh my God, you're a weirdo. I love you.
Yeah.
Like that woman's outfit is so weird. I'm dying. I wish I could dress like that, you know?
Totally.
But I don't know why we are, I don't know about imagination. I have to think about it more. But there is something weird about something wrong with imagination in society in general.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
I don't like it. I'm going to think about imagination. I'm going to come back to this, I'm sure. I wanted to ask you, because you're an author and your book was marketed, I'm sure. Who do we think is responsible for this kind of bizarre marketing on this book? Do we think that that comes from the publisher? Do we think that that comes from the author? Because it is in her introduction, that whole, this is a book about women's desire.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder... Because it also is very much, it's on the, you know, in the jacket cover.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it when I've seen her on publications and on TV talking about being asked about that as like a talking point. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, like, and maybe not that it's blame, but maybe the responsibility falls on multiple things. But if you could speak to kind of that process at all.
I would say it's probably layered.
Yeah.
I kind of felt in the intro, because the last line of her intro, I think, says something like, this is a story of three women.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting to that line and feeling a little relieved.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was she wrote the three stories and then – because she couldn't write the intro until after she wrote the stories.
Right.
Right? She's talking about the stories
right.
and her research.
Right.
So I know for sure she had input.
Right.
I don't know how much. And every publisher is different. She obviously has a very large publisher. Sometimes you have less say depending on,
right.
you know, where you are in kind of the hierarchy of things. I'm curious though, in the interviews, did she say?
No.
She didn't say.
No.
Yeah. There had to be, the publishers are always thinking in numbers.
Right.
So there had to be a reason. And I think it's a lot catchier to have a book about women's desire,
mm-hmm.
then I'm going to tell you about three women.
Right.
Which unfortunately, you know, the three, if it were just, this is a book about three women, that would have made the experience for me, like that's how it would feel the most pleasurable.
Right.
I think it gets people in the door to go like, oh, this is an expose.
Right.
It does feel marketing.
But don't you feel like if that's what it is, then we do need her voice again. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like even the publisher, the marketers also wanted her to come back and tell us what we've learned. You know, like, it's like, I feel like everything about this book could have been enhanced if she came back and said, and this is what I learned from this.
Right.
Like, because, do you see X, Y, and Z?
Right. Because there were only a few. The epilogue was super interesting because it goes in and out of her own story. Mm-hmm. And then she goes into the other characters again, which was really unique. And I wanted to ask her questions about, like, why did you make this choice? That's so interesting to me. I mean, it worked. It just felt a little like, I've never seen that before. Right. And it was just interesting and unique. But there are a few times where she'll say something, like in the epilogue, she says, even when women are being heard, it is often only the right types of women who are actively heard. White ones, rich ones, pretty ones, young ones. So,
but that's your book.
Right. Exactly.
Like, that's who's in your book.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know if maybe sometimes people get the ARCs, the advanced read copies, mm-hmm. and then things change. So somebody might have said something about the diversity,
right?
You know, who knows? Like, there are some little takeaways that she mentions, but yeah, if it was going to be just about, like, if the focus is women's desire, because there's something so, it just, for me at least, feels very violating when you think a book is going to be something. Like, if it's marketed, there was a book I read that was marketed as a bit of a thriller. It was a memoir, but a bit of a thriller, mm-hmm. with centering around like one specific plot. Mm-hmm. And that plot turned out to be like a little 10% of it. And it was just like a standard memoir that was like whole life story biography. Mm-mm. And it made me very upset. So
this has happened to me before on memoir. Yeah. It happens a lot in memoir.
Interesting.
I hate it.
I wonder if that is the marketing.
Yeah. I think we would be totally irresponsible if we didn't just talk quickly about Maggie.
Yes.
Because I feel like Maggie is presented to be in a relationship, and Maggie is not in a relationship. Maggie is being abused by her teacher as an underage child, and she's sexually assaulted and raped. I mean, I guess there's technical terms for rape versus colloquial terms, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in the colloquial sense, because I guess there's no penis into any body part.
She didn't
have
like vaginal intercourse, right, forced on her.
But he manually.
Yeah, she was raped.
Orally.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the way that I was reading the book, because it is these women's stories, I was thinking this is Maggie's perspective. Mm-hmm. So that's why the grooming felt so powerful to me, that she feels so, he gets her to believe that it's a relationship. He gets her to believe, gets her to be obsessed with him,
right?
Because these are her formative years,
right?
Like, her first major sexual experiences are rape. She doesn't know it's rape, but it feels good. And so she, I do wish, because it does get to a point where she finally, through other people's eyes, discovers,
right,
oh, that's what that was. Even then, though, I mean, it was not enough. I wish there'd been more of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we, in your work, in your years of doing this, because I feel like you have a better sense, is it even considered desire if it's through grooming and through abuse?
Mm. What an excellent question. I mean, desire is, I mean, you can feel hungry because somebody put a bunch of, you know, food in front of your face. Like, mm-hmm. you can have reactions. So, like, mm-hmm. for example, having an orgasm or feeling physically aroused, all of that happens very often in abusive relationships.
Right.
So I think she's experiencing desire, but she doesn't realize that because he's such a massive, like, very skilled manipulator, mm-hmm. I mean, just like sociopathic, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say she was feeling desire, but she was absolutely being abused the entire time.
Right. That you can feel a physical thing, mm-hmm. without actually it being authentically, like, that you can be manipulated into feeling something physical without having the true desire. Mental part of it was not necessarily connected to the physical pleasure of it, or vice versa.
You know, that's a hard one to answer, I think. But I do, I mean, because I think she, he got her to be very emotionally into him.
Right.
And he got her to be very physically into him.
But right? not through truthful, open exactly. ways, I guess is what
yes,
I mean.
Totally.
Like I was thinking about, like, you're saying you can be in an abusive relationship and have yeah. a real orgasm.
Yes.
Like that those two things, what you physically feel isn't necessarily tied to the emotional part of it. Because then when you go and you go have therapy or you go to talk to someone about that abusive relationship
yes.
and this – the pleasure of the sex mm-hmm. and the abuse of the relationship aren't right. mutually exclusive, which right. I think is what makes it hard.
Absolutely.
If you could separate these things totally.
It's so easy.
It would be so easy.
I mean, relatively. Like, it's right. much more – it's much easier to separate then.
Right.
Because one of the reasons that it's hard for survivors to speak up is, like, they feel so complicated about – like, complicated emotions about right. all this.
Because they feel like I enjoyed this.
Right.
So it wasn't all bad or something along those mm-hmm. lines. Or I asked for this. I yeah. wanted this thing. And I do think of all of the things in this book that I had issue with, I think that there is – there. I felt like it was irresponsible the way mm-hmm. that Maggie was presented. I felt like – the author had an obligation to come in and say clearly to us, I, as a responsible adult telling this story, recognize this as rape, assault, whatever, because, and this would be probably the only spoiler on the episode, so if you haven't read the book, 30 seconds, fast forward, because the judge and jury then say that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
If the judge and jury had said that it was assault and that the teacher was at fault and had done something wrong, I don't think that the author would have to say it. Mm. But I kind of feel like the author has to say to us, she was only 17 years old. She was only a girl. She was manipulated and she was put in a situation that was yeah. unfair and unsafe for her.
That's what that is.
Do you know what I mean?
I completely hear what you're saying. Yes, absolutely. I liked that they did have the parents believing her
mm-hmm.
and the parents, and then the mom finds more handwriting samples.
Right.
So she finds more proof and evidence.
Right.
So, like, there's no question, at least there was never a question for me. Like, Maggie's not, we're in Maggie's head.
Right.
Right. So this is Maggie's story. I would believe her anyway. Like, this is, to me, it's right. very obvious that this is abuse.
Right.
But I do, that was a really good point you made about her mentioning it, even in the intro, to say, there is an underage person in this story.
Right.
Because I did see, after reading the book, I went to the Amazon page and just looked at a few reviews. And one of the negative reviews that was like, you know, they ranked them by the most popular.
Right.
And it was, one of them was saying something about that she was having this inappropriate relation. Like this reader didn't get it. This reader right. thought that she had an inappropriate relationship. And she even said something like, well, she should have known better. And I was just thought, oh my gosh.
Right. I mean, also, like, if I want to be really nitpicky, and I don't know that I do, but I do think it's worth just throwing out there. If this book is about women's desires, how is an underage girl in this book?
Mm.
You know, mm. like she's a girl.
Yeah.
We sexualize.
Does she even turn?
I mean, by the time Lisa Tadeo gets to this, like by the time we get to the trial and stuff, she's an adult.
She's an adult,
but
yeah.
no, she's but he's waiting for her to turn 18. Remember?
That's right.
And
before
then
they will,
and then
take it further.
He has the birthday, and the wife finds out.
That's right. Yeah, I guess she was probably thinking she met Maggie as an adult because she's a real person,
right?
So she's telling her story, and in order to tell it, she went to the backstory,
right?
But it didn't even occur to me,
right,
that because her story's first,
and her two sexual encounters that we actually hear about are when she's underage.
We never find out about her desire as an adult.
As
do
an
we,
adult,
really.
I don't think not
other than that she still has feelings, like
yeah.
she still has some obsessive feelings for him.
Yeah. If there's anything else, I think she maybe dates someone at her job afterwards or something, but it's not central to her story.
No, it was very like passing the time kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like she had some casual dates and sex.
Right. But like the majority of her sex story that we're presented with is her as a girl.
I wonder if the author chose the title.
Yeah. I would be very curious to know about the title.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's actually the next thing we're going to talk about before we get out of here is I always talk about the title and the cover. And yeah. this particular title, it needs another word. It needs like these three women or like, I don't know.
Three women in how you were saying, like this is specific population. So
yeah.
something that lets
like
you know.
Like three white ladies.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
like, I don't know. Or like something that's like in these beds or something that's like very specific to these people, whoever these
Because the women sounds too broad to you? Is it like sounds like all women?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like all women because it's not all women. But sure. Like maybe part of my hesitation against the title is because I've read the introduction and I've read some of the things after the fact. But to be honest, 100% honest, when I saw this book, I thought it was fiction. Before I ever clicked anything about the book, just seeing it on my Instagram feed, I thought it was going to be like three women. Like, I thought it was going to be like Sex in the City. That's what I thought.
Yeah, because there's no subtitle. And there's nonfiction no subtitle. Usually has a subtitle that tells you what you're going to learn.
There's no subtitle. And it's like the white with the black and it's a little bit of red. And it just felt very like one of my least favorite terms ever. It feels very women's fiction on the outside to me, the packaging.
Yeah, I think I would have thought this was fiction too.
100%. It doesn't say a novel, but it also doesn't say three women, the story of three women's sexual desire in America in 2019.
Totally. There's just fine print at the top in Elizabeth Gilbert's blurb that says it's nonfiction.
Right.
But then on the back, the blurbs, like this is the one that when I first saw, I was like, uh-oh. Because it says it just says New York. And I don't know who said this.
Oh, I have different blurbs.
Oh, interesting. Oh, you do?
Because I don't have – you have the sticker, the New York Times bestseller sticker.
Oh, okay.
I have the original – like I got this before it came out.
Does that say Esther Perel?
Yep. It also has Dave Eggers, which I find to be very weird.
Oh, that is weird. Do you have this one from New York? The most in-depth look at the female sex drive and all its accompanying social, emotional, reproductive, and anthropological implications. It's been published.
No, but if I had that, I probably would burn this book. I mean, not actually. But if I had that, I'd probably burn the jacket. Yeah. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, that doesn't... And
especially
again,
knowing what's in this book.
One person's opinion, that's fine. But like to put on the cover.
And to say
I don't
New
think
York.
That Lisa Tadeo had...
No, she doesn't have anything to do
with it. Yeah, all of New York.
Yes. All of New York thinks that this book is all-encompassing of all women everywhere, period.
What does Esther Perel say? Because she's an incredible sex therapist. Like, she's one of the best.
Yeah, she's one of the leaders. Mm-hmm. She says, Three Women offers a fascinating excavation of the intricacies of love and desire, where they conspire and where they conflict. Read this book. You will forever rethink the erotics of women. Mm. I just think all of this of women...
That's what bothers me.
That's what bothers me. Yeah. If it was...
I like Gwyneth Paltrow's blurb. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah. Great. That feels real to me. But yes, this like of women, this women... This book is not my experience and I'm a woman. Right. So there we go. It's already a lie. Do you know what I mean? Like you can so quickly go in and say, this isn't women because it's not my experience and I identify as a woman. So therefore, you know, and that's like a really not... thoughtful way of having that conversation, but it's very quick and easy.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Maggie's story felt like it was reading like a thriller to me.
Yeah.
It had suspense to it.
Yeah, totally.
And like bite. And it's, to me, it was really interesting. Like I know people because I talked to, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of women about sexuality. I know people who would relate to so many parts of all these different things. Mm-hmm. Like I can think of people. So I appreciate it for that.
Right.
I just wish it was presented more as what that is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you title the book differently to make it more clear. Maybe it is just the matter of having a subtitle to say what the book is supposed to be. Though I don't know that I would trust the subtitle of this book because I think it would say something about the inner workings of women's sexual desires or something. But at least there would maybe be a space to be like three women, the story of three women and how and what that teaches us about sex in America, you know? And even still, that's too all-encompassing.
You have to choose a geographical location.
Right.
You know, like something to make it like.
Well, two of them are in the middle of America and then Sloan is like.
One's in North Dakota.
Yeah. I think Maggie's North Dakota. Sloan is not Martha's Vineyard, but she's Cape Cod or something like that.
Yeah. Somewhere out northeast.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I just wish.
I know they changed some locations. Like she said she changed details.
Oh, right. That's right.
But I don't know what details was, but names and locations.
The two other women's names are not their names, but Maggie is
Maggie is.
And Aaron
is
Aaron. Yeah, because it's in the public discourse. So if you Google Maggie, three women, you can find all the
fascinating stuff.
Yeah, which I've done.
Wow. I will do that.
I did a little bit of it. Okay. I think we should get out of here. I feel like we've covered most of the bases, though I could talk about this book more and more. It's one of those books that I didn't necessarily I liked reading it, but I had a lot of negative thoughts, which is almost always my favorite kind of book for the show.
Oh, interesting. Like, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, if you like everything and think it's great and 100%, it's like, okay, 5 minutes later, next. Like, I think that there's just so much to discuss in this book.
Yeah, it's thought-provoking and it makes you want to have discussions, which
right,
is good.
Right, exactly. And I think there's a lot to discuss. And I also am so glad you were here and you were the guest because I think that you have such insight into sex and desire and women and people who identify as women and people who have identified as women in the past. And I just think that it was a good match. So thank you so much for being here, August.
Thank you. And thank you for suggesting this book. I'm really glad I read it.
Oh, good.
And I love your show. And this was just a really fun conversation.
Yay. I love it. And everybody else, we will see you in the stacks. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to August for being our guest. I'd also like to say a thank you to the folks over at Avid Reader for sending us a copy of Three Women. You can find everything we discussed on today's episode in the link in the show notes. Make sure to get your book recommendation read on air by sending us an email at askingthestacks@gmail.com. For more from The Stacks, please follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join the Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, head to patreon.com/thestacks. Thanks to Audible, listeners of this podcast get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you are subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegeerages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.